Recorded live at Talks and Tasting Studios, it's the Clerical Errors Podcast, the podcast that shows you what's behind the collar. Let's go.
From the Talks and Tasting Studios, this is the Clerical Errors Podcast, the podcast that shows you
what's behind the collar.
This is Bullhagen.
This is Berg.
And this is Vicar.
Peter's here.
Hey, Pete.
Hey, Pete. So, how's everybody going? Doing? Good.
Well, it's going steady by jerks, as they say.
Hey. Hey, it looks like it's nice and sunny where you are.
It's always nice and sunny where I am.
Is that just reflection from snow into the window?
No. It's been 50 degrees out here. Everything's pretty much melted that isn't in the shade, and the sun is beautiful. I walked in short sleeves this afternoon.
Hey.
Outside. It was beautiful. So
that's funny, because here in Kansas City it's 41 right now. I woke up and it was 23, I think.
Yeah.
The times, they are a-changing.
Yes, I have an idea for us to do, that is a battle. You guys can say if this is a dumb idea, because I forgot to mention this before we started. Okay. Should we do a battle royale of which district is the best district? By picking a team in the NCAA tournament from that district and see which team is the best to represent that district. Moving on!
I think it's a really funny idea that would require work to make it happen.
Yes.
And therefore won't happen.
Okay. All right. All right. So.
Listener. Okay. Wait, no.
I will be happy to record that on my own, because everyone else is disinterested in this idea. And then we'll tack it on at the end of the episode, or make it a bonus.
If you want. Or we could shoot it over to the podcast mom or the super fan or something. If we tell them on the podcast, they won't have a choice. So.
Yeah. I don't trust them to know anything about basketball. So, yes. All right.
Well,
listen.
If it happens, if there's anything at the end just of the podcast, the listener, you know he did it. And if there isn't, you know he
didn't do it.
Literally,
that'll take me 15 minutes to do and record. I'll do it.
Okay.
And, yeah. All right. So, back to the show. It looks like you're sunning yourself there, Berg. You all right? So we have a
looks like he's got something interesting he's sipping on, though.
Yeah, it's called a Celebrator. It's a Doppelbock, finest Bavarian double bock. It's really kind of beautiful. It's dark, malty, and rich. So this brewery has been going since 1878. So
holy cow!
Do you know what, the word celebrate is forever scarring to me.
Because of that one song, or is it something else?
No, it's because something that happened. So when my wife and I were first married, right, she was 19, I was 21, right? So we had to set up to get insurance, right? And we set up insurance with this man. He's, getting close to retirement, but he's like super evangelical.
Mm-hmm.
And I still don't know what he's talking about. Oh, because he said, we got a newlyweds here. Yeah. Yep. Just to let you know, my wife and I aren't celibate. We celebrate. Like,
oh my goodness.
What are you talking about? I don't know.
That just makes me angry.
Yeah, let's talk about insurance, fella. Yeah. So, on that note.
We don't use insurance.
We celebrate. So, Vicar, what am I preaching on?
You are preaching on the triumphal entry from John 12. It goes thus: the next day, the large crowd that had come to the feast heard that Jesus was coming to Jerusalem. So they took branches of palm trees and went out to meet him, crying out, "Hosanna! Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord, even the King of Israel." And Jesus found a young donkey and sat on it, just as it is written, "Fear not, daughter of Zion. Behold, your king is coming, sitting on a donkey's colt." His disciples did not understand these things at first, but when Jesus was glorified, then they remembered that these things had been written about him and had been done to him. The crowd that had been with him when he called Lazarus out of the tomb and raised him from the dead continued to bear witness. The reason why the crowd went to meet him was that they heard he had done this sign. So the Pharisees said to one another, "You see that you are gaining nothing. Look, the world has gone after him.
All right, so, Berg, do you preach the Palm Sunday text, or you do the Sunday of the Passion thing?
Well, Sunday of the Passion is technically the Judica. This is the traditional reading for the church year, is right. the Passion according to St. Matthew. And then on Tuesday, it's according to St. Mark. On Wednesday, it's according to St. Luke. And then you have from John, the foot washing for Monday, Thursday. And then on Friday, you're supposed to have the gospel or the Passion reading according to St. John. And so, like, if you do that, you actually get all four Passion accounts if you go to church, which is, I think, really cool because really, my first year as a pastor, when I did the traditional reading for John, I didn't on Good Friday. There was a family that came up to me and said, well, where is, you know, my God, where have you forsaken me? Why have you forsaken me? Because it's not in John. There are other right. things that are in John that are really cool, but that isn't in the Passion according to St. John. That's in the other ones. And so this is why in Iowa, I had church every day during Holy Week to get into that ebb and flow of, hey, look, this is what you're going to hear, yeah, right? And mm-hmm. there are obviously lots and lots of similarities between the Passion accounts, but there are some really interesting and cool distinctions between each one. So,
yeah. Hmm.
So yeah. Traditionally, this Sunday for the triumphal entry is supposed to be the Passion according to St. Matthew. And I can yeah. say that because Gaudestin's put out a Lutheran daily missal called the Daily Divine Service Book, edited by Heath Curtis. And I don't know if Emmanuel Press still puts it out, but, you know, I don't think they've done the sort of deep work that the Missal Project is doing, but, you know.
But good work.
Yeah, it's good work and it's a good reference, so.
So you can tell that I haven't done a lot of working on my sermon yet. That's the problem when we record on Monday. I never do. So I'm kind of at a loss here. All right.
Do you want me to start talking?
Yeah. Okay. My brain's not fired up quite yet.
So, like, I just did Matthew 21 for the kids this morning. So it's interesting to me to see the differences between like Matthew's account and John's account here, right? Because John's account is where we get the name Palm Sunday from. The others say that they cut branches from the tree, but John actually tells us that these were palms. Palms were symbols of victory. This is why in heaven you see that the glorified church or the glorious church in heaven, they actually still bear palms in their hands.
Which also what I like because it just proves that, you know, heaven's by a beach.
Oh, well, that too. And you remember those like foam fingers yeah. for your sports teams, right? That mm-hmm. palms were that before they had the foam fingers, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So another thing that, you know, John talks about a lot is the feast. All of these things have happened, you know, near the feast or during the feast. Jesus spends a lot more time in the temple in the Gospel of John than he does in the other synoptics, right? We hear more mm-hmm. about it. We hear more about his teaching. This, too, also really puts forward Jesus' kingship and actually has it in the in the words of the people where they call him the King of Israel, which mm-hmm. you don't really find outside of the prophecy of Zechariah in the other accounts. I like the little explanation that his disciples didn't understand these things. And I mean, we see it with the crowds too, right? They don't understand these things. Right. In Matthew's gospel, you know, the city says, who is this? And people say, well, it's the prophet Jesus of Nazareth, which, you know, Jesus just said, hey, look, I'm the Messiah. I'm the King of Israel. I'm fulfilling these prophecies, and yet they just simply call him a prophet. And of course, Nazareth is never really a good thing in right. the Bible, right?
Right.
So, but here we get a little more, Jesus' own disciples didn't understand what was going on until after the fact, until after Jesus opens the scriptures to them and gives them the Holy Spirit to understand that after he has been raised from the dead.
And it's the kind of situation, too, that kind of is building up to his death in the sense that, you know, the crowd was getting people to make Jesus seem more dangerous. You know,
right.
Look at the crowds.
And isn't that what we see with, now we see the cause for why there were crowds there. I mean, I'm sure there were a lot of people riding in on donkeys for the feast. And yet, what makes them cry out like this? Because of Lazarus, right? He has mm-hmm. raised a man from the dead. And then, I've always thought it'd be fun to preach on that last thing from the Pharisees. You see that you're accomplishing nothing. Look, the world has gone after him.
Mm-hmm.
Which just a few days later, the world will be against him. But then 2,000 years later, the enemies of Christ are accomplishing nothing, and the world goes after him, in that there are many converts from every tribe and nation and the like. Which I think is, you know, really fun and interesting, right? So.
Which account has Jesus mentioning if they remain quiet, the stones will cry out?
It's not John.
Luke. It's in Luke.
So I think Luke has the donkey on which no one has ever sat. And then they also have, yes, Vickers said, it was Luke's account, right?
I always thought that was interesting too, because at first glance, it might seem that the stones are crying out in praise, but I don't think that's really what Jesus is trying to say, because Jesus talks about not one stone standing on another in the because he was rejected.
Yeah, I mean, you could talk about, if you wanted to actually focus on that from Luke's account, you could actually focus on that all nature glorifies God. Here, even the stones would, and that the Pharisees are actually harder than the stones, because even the stones would cry out. You could talk mm-hmm. about that all creation suffers because of man's sin, and that not one stone will be left on another.
Mm-hmm.
And then you could talk about living stones, that we are the living stones made into the new temple of God as the church, right?
Mm-hmm. And you could talk about just the kingly aspect of it, what kind of king he actually is.
Yeah,
now, does
that
it
he's
take
humble.
The kingdom by force, but by grace? And now he will return in great, great might, but he is a king that doesn't use the armies or violence, but his word, which shows is more powerful than any of the armies. And when we think of what the church does and how it operates, you know, we're in a interesting time where we want to fight fire with fire, but at the same time, we're in a interesting time because we also realize that the word of God and grace and mercy and forgiveness is very powerful. And the church has always recognized that there was great power in being a victim or being a martyr or be willing to die for what is good and right, because the kingdom isn't of this world, that what can they actually do to us? You know, it's like a candle. You know, remember those candles that were supposed to never go out, and they always did. They just crackle once in a while.
Are you talking about the eternal life and the eternal light in church?
That only goes out during a thunderstorm. Yeah, but you know, go ahead.
Another thing you could do too is like actually look at Psalm 118 that they are quoting, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that we sang with the Lord's Supper, right? Blessed is mm-hmm. he, blessed is he, blessed is he that cometh in the name of the Lord, right? I mean, so mm-hmm. those are like, you could actually be like, okay, what are they expecting? Why are they singing this? Or, you know, going back to verse 22 of Psalm 18, the stone which the builders rejected has become the chief cornerstone. Mm. Like all of this is in this. If you just do some digging. So.
Well, thank you, Berg, since I have done not much for my sermon yet. My thinking is not, you know how it is on Monday. Sometimes Mondays, you know.
It's Monday.
Yeah, the spirit is willing, but the.
As your favorite hymn on Monday says, it's a manic Monday.
Oh. So I need to get fired up here. So I do have...
You doing okay? Are you doing okay on the allergy front at least?
Yes, I believe
so. You sound
so.
Better.
I believe so. Yes. Yes, I've stayed away from peanuts, wheat, and commercials with dogs. So
it's just those kids going on your yard.
That's right.
You got to put up a fence. Good fences make good neighbors.
So
dumb stuff, unfortunately, is everywhere still.
So I do have, since we're talking about kings, the king, Jesus being a king, I thought I would do two top 10 lists, top 12 lists. Boy, I'm calling it top 10 list. That means I am.
It's pretty bad if you're doing that.
Right.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Right. So I like this thing of doing a speed run than the actually official top 12 list.
Okay.
Oh, no.
Okay. Because I'm the only one here that cares about sports, right? I have to make this one fast. This is the top 12 kings in athletics.
Okay.
Okay. One I've left off this list is Billie Jean King. Okay.
Ah.
All right. But Peter.
Peter, play the intro.
Enough nonsense. It's time for Bull Hagen's top 12.
I do like this fast one, Pete, by the way. It's nice.
Yeah, the fast one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You ready?
Do you want me to number them? Oh, that's what we do for the quick one, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Number 12.
Gerald King, a football player.
Number 11.
Kenny King, a football player.
Number 10.
James King, from basketball player.
Number 9.
Jeff King, a baseball player.
Number 8.
Clyde King, a baseball player.
Number 7.
Stacey King, a basketball player.
Number 6. Bulls.
Reggie King, a basketball player.
Number 5.
Don King, the boxing promoter.
Number 4.
Caitlin Clark.
Number 3.
LeBron James.
Number 2.
I lost count. Jimmy King. Jimmy
number,
King.
Number one.
Help me out, guys. Tayshaun Prince.
The Sacramento Kings.
The Sacramento King. Any argument there? Anything that you should be...
I'm convinced.
Are you convinced?
I would say that my number one is Arthur King. From the very, very short cartoon, Arthur, King Arthur and the Knights of Justice from the 90s. So
sure. Okay.
How long did it take you to find all these kings?
Martin Luther King Jr.
You didn't know those.
I knew.
You had to do some Googling.
What do you mean?
The wrestling promoter?
No, Don King? You don't know who Don King
Don
is?
King?
Don
never
King?
Never heard of Don King.
You've never? Really? I've heard of Don King.
The hair?
Oh, man, we got to Google this.
All right. The greasiest character in all sports.
The greasiest character in all sports.
Bernard King was unstoppable until he blew out his knee. Jimmy King from the Fab Five people. Tayshaun Prince from the Pistons.
This guy looks like he could teach theoretical physics.
Yeah, he kind of looks like an old Romeo from PJ Mask.
Oh, there we go. That's better.
Yeah. I had to put Caitlin Clark because she's, you know, from Iowa.
Oh, sure.
I guarantee you, I know someone who knows someone who knows Caitlin Clark because she's from Iowa.
Probably.
Yeah.
Should we talk quickly about how we went to the semifinals in Kansas City to the Big 12 championship?
Sure. Peter and I, the producer, were actually on ESPN. Can you share that with the group?
I'll leave it to the listener to find us on the broadcast, I guess. I'm not going to post it.
You're not going to post it?
No.
I'm sure we have some dedicated fans who would love to chase it down and post it on the Facebook page.
Well, if they want to donate to see the picture.
Right.
I'm not sharing this picture.
That means, listener, you have to offer a ton of money for this.
We can't send it to, like, at least the podcast mom would be proud.
Yeah.
I mean, it probably represents how our super fan listens to the show.
There we are.
Okay. Oh, look at you guys. I see it. I see it.
Dancing.
Good work. Good work.
So that's my top 12.
Let's keep moving.
Oh, yeah. So what did we do, Bull Hagen? We walked around until we found somebody we knew from Iowa.
Yeah, and we did.
And we did. It didn't take us even a full lap.
You go to Kansas City in an Iowa State game, you're going to run into people you know. Just the way it is.
I saw my English teacher on the Jumbotron.
So obviously, then we need to get to the official top 12 list.
Peter, play the intro.
Enough nonsense. It's time for Bullhagen's top 12.
So, Vicar, stand by, okay?
Okay.
Because in my writing these, my brain, all these kings get jumbled in my head. So be ready to provide some information on each of these kings.
Okay.
You're the app, remember?
That's right.
Like, maybe when I mention it, mention the time of rule.
Okay.
Got it?
Yeah.
Can you handle this?
I think I can.
Are
do
you
this.
Up to this?
I'll do my best.
Okay. Any kings you think will be on this list? Kings of the Bible.
Are you asking
well, I mean,
me?
Herod
yeah,
is going to
yeah,
be on
yeah,
the
like,
list, right?
Let's see how solid my list is.
David's going to have to be on it.
Yeah. I mean, David, Josiah, Solomon. Joash, Uzziah for a while, Asa for a while.
Nebuchadnezzar.
So, Jesus.
All right, I guess
LeBron
I'm done.
James.
Number 12.
Saul. You got to have him there somewhere. I mean, he kind of fell apart.
The first thing king is, of Israel. Yeah.
Yeah. The thing is, like...
he didn't do anything that bad.
Well...
Wait a minute.
So, yeah, so when you think of, the thing is when you're looking at the kings, God didn't really want kings anyways because he knew what kings in this world do, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, where God says in Hosea 13:11, I gave you a king in my anger and took him away in my wrath. Uh-oh. Although, I will say this, kings do belong to natural law because this is what we see in Genesis with Edom. The Edomites have kings long before Israel ever had a king. Only theirs really corresponded way more to natural law because theirs was not a hereditary monarchy, but theirs was an elected monarchy because you see that the towns and the people chosen aren't related.
Yeah.
I do think there's somebody's got a rule.
Right.
I mean, in one sense, our president is a mononarchical principle for our government. The Senate is almost an aristocratic, because that's exactly what they were originally supposed to be. It's more of an aristocratic sort of
right.
Our, you know, impulse, and then you also have more of a democratic impulse in your representatives.
Right, more of a just
John
a
Adams,
local flavor. Yeah.
Yeah, so John Adams wrote about this, and then they called him a monarchist, which is, you know, dumb. But, like, he used to call the president Your Excellency, which I think is awesome, because, there's a reason why most of human history we've had kings.
Yeah.
Now, I don't necessarily agree with hereditary monarchy, but, like, somebody's got to be in charge. The buck has to stop somewhere.
Right.
So,
all right, Vicar, when did Saul rule there?
He ruled in the late 11th century BC.
Number 11.
And I think I could be talked into this moving way up the list because it's kind of a not what you would say a typical king. Okay.
Okay.
And that is Adam.
Yeah. He's king of the world.
Yeah. Because,
like from Titanic, I'm king of the world.
We were just talking
only
about
only for
this.
Him, it was real.
Right. The reason why I say that is we were actually just talking at our Winkle about some of this and how the order of creation is kind of cool in the sense that God set up, created the world, and then he really, in a sense, built a kingdom and then placed the king in the kingdom. I mean, the world was built for him, for us.
Yep.
And for him to be the king. Well, how do we know he was kind of a king? Well, what did God give him the charge to do? The king over, to rule over, name the animals, have dominion over everything, and have a wife, and become, be fruitful, multiply, and be king of your home, and rule as a kingdom. And when we talk about Adam being created in the image of God, I think that actually is part of it too. Not just, you know, just the whole, what we say in the catechism is what we kind of talked about at the Winkle, where in the explanation where it's just, you have the image and it was lost. But there's some remnants of that we still hold on to as far as subduing and the realizing that the world was built for humans, where the world, everyone seems to say people are the problem and that we just get in the way of the world and of the animals and the seas and all this. But actually, it was created for us, for Adam.
Right. Verses 4 and 5 of Psalm 8, right? What is man that you are mindful of him, and the son of man that you visit him? For you have made him a little lower than the angels, and you have crowned him with glory and honor. Oh, look, a crown. I don't think that has anything to do with kingship.
Right.
You have made him to have dominion over the works of your hands. You have put all things under his feet, all sheep and oxen, even the beasts of the field, the birds of the air, and the fish of the sea that pass through the paths of the sea. So, I mean, this is true of mankind in general, and it especially applies to our Lord Jesus in particular,
right,
who then makes us spiritual kings and priests.
And here's a thought for the listener to think about, right? At Christmas time, we talk about the incarnation where Jesus became man and joined us in our humanity. But don't you think that actually Adam was created in the image of Christ? So it's a chicken and egg thing.
Right, because it was always intended for Christ to take on flesh. So it's more likely that Adam was created in the flesh that Christ was to take on, right? Is that kind of what you're getting
at? Yeah. Number 10, Cyrus.
Yeah. I believe he's Darius the Mede, too.
Oh, you think it's the same dude, huh?
I think it's the same dude. Chronology works out. Darius the Mede was 65 when Babylon was taken. That would be about the same age as Cyrus. He has two different names because his mom was a Mede. And so she called him Darius. And then, obviously, his regal name was Cyrus, you know?
And he was pretty good for Israel.
Yeah. I mean, he's called a Messiah, mm-hmm. an anointed one, by Isaiah, so.
Yeah. When did he rule?
From 559 to 530. So a good 29 years.
Yeah.
You know, these people are known, the Persian Empire is known as the bear with the ribs sticking out of its teeth, right? The bloody ribs in the prophecies of Daniel. So, you know, Cyrus was a good guy, and then it got worse.
Right, but he, right. But, I mean, he really did a lot of his work did a good job of setting up everything for Christ.
Number 9,
Uzziah.
Yeah, he was a good guy, reigned a long time. See, this is why not everyone is a minister. Vicar, what am I talking about?
Wasn't he one of the two people who sacrificed not as they should and then were swallowed up by the earth? Or am I thinking of two different people?
That's Korah's rebellion.
Oh, that's right. That's Korah.
So that's during Moses' time. Uzziah tried to burn incense in the temple. The priests opposed him, and then God struck him with leprosy until he died.
Yeah. Yes. So,
dear listener, not everyone is a minister.
Right.
And by minister, you know, that's a famous book out there for those who don't know.
Right.
Somebody wrote some dumb thing called Everybody a Minister. And in one sense, it's true, because everyone is a servant. If you want to be great in the kingdom of heaven, you have to serve. And if you want to be the highest, you need to be the lowest slave. Okay. If you mean minister in that way, great. Not everyone is a pastor.
Right. Which is how, you know, if you're using the word and people don't understand the difference of those words, you're just going to bring confusion.
Exactly. So, yes, everyone is a servant if you are a Christian. That's true. But not everyone serves in the pastoral office.
So, Vicar, when did King Uzziah reign?
He reigned for a full 42 years from 783 to 742.
And that should serve as a reminder, Vicar, if you ever get tempted to, you know, bless the elements or something, you get leprosy.
Well, and Vicar, what great prophet arose in the year of King Uzziah's death?
Was it Isaiah?
Yep, right.
Okay.
That's when he had his vision, right?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay.
Number 8.
The only people tend to know about this is the saying, great Jehoshaphat.
Oh.
Right?
I love that guy. Although he did some bad things, too.
Right, but
I think that pretty well describes everybody,
all
though.
The kings, right?
Well, I think it describes every human being, but like Jehoshaphat is wonderful, but his intermarriage with Ahab and Jezebel causes huge problems for his descendants.
Do you know what's funny about this as we're talking about the kings, by the way?
What's that?
Is like, if you were to describe our current situation with our presidents, and like you wrote like a biblical narrative of today, you think about, well, there was this king who kind of went senile and didn't know what he was saying. And then you have another one who sold golden sneakers and, you know, you could totally.
And was on Home Alone and he reigned for 8 years. And are not all of his acts in the books of
of the Art of the Deal.
So if someone looks at the kings of the Bible and say, there's no way any of this could happen. Oh, yeah.
Far weirder stuff happens today.
Yeah. If you read the Bible and can't say or don't think that any of this happened, then you don't know people very well.
So, Berg, why do you love Jehoshaphat so much?
He was a godly man. He did a lot of wonderful things. I want to say he was one of the ones who cleansed the temple and that sort of thing. The problem is that he wanted to do missionary work, and he thought he could win the northern kingdom over by intermarriage. He cared so much about blood that he lost sight of God. And while this didn't affect him, it definitely affects his descendants. In fact, the result of his marrying his son to one of Jezebel's daughters results in Athaliah, who then kills most of the house of David. And only Joash survives because the priest Jehoiada and his wife hides the baby for 7 years.
Yeah, that's unintended consequences.
Yeah, I mean, what we do actually matters. It matters who you marry.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
I just told my confirmation kids, I tell them, probably one of the most important decisions you make in your life is who you're going to marry.
Number 7.
Josiah.
Great king. Nobody's like him since David. He actually goes north. He not only cleanses his own realm, but then he goes north to Bethel and he burns the bones of the false priests on these deserted altars of the northern kingdom, thus fulfilling the prophecy made against Jeroboam and the like. So it's pretty rad.
And he ruled from a young age.
He ruled from a young age. His only problem was he got in the way of Necho and the Babylonians. And this then leads to the downfall of the kingdom. So unfortunately, that's part of the problem. He strives mightily to forestall an inevitable future. God has already decreed judgment against Judah. They are going to go into exile. He does everything he can to avoid it, but he can't. He can delay it, that it won't happen during his days, but...
Yeah, I think that's what they constantly run into is you can't rule, you can rule over with laws and that kind of thing, but you really can't rule over people's hearts.
But you got to think, his father, Manasseh, is the reason why God finally makes it the final countdown. And so he's trying not only to atone for his father's sins, who, thanks be to God, Manasseh repents at the end, but also for his people's sins, because they lost the Bible.
Right.
So, you know, I have a lot of respect for Josiah, because he's not like a lot of Lutherans here, where it's like, well, as long as this congregation doesn't close in my time, it's okay.
Right.
I mean, seriously, like, here's a man who had the word of the Lord that, okay, the kingdom is going to be destroyed, just not in your time. And yet he does everything he possibly can do to forestall that, to reverse that. And to me, that shows great moral and spiritual courage in that he is willing to say, well, maybe God will change his mind.
Right. Trusting.
I wish we had more of that in the Missouri Senate.
Good point.
Number 6.
Hezekiah.
Really? You put him above Josiah?
Okay, here we go.
I mean, come on.
Yeah. Okay.
Hezekiah is exactly the guy I'm talking about. He's the one who said, well, as long as it doesn't happen in my time, that's okay. I mean, don't get me wrong. He's a godly man. He does a lot of good things.
He did a lot of, abolished a lot of idolatry, right?
He did. Like, don't get me wrong, but.
All right. I'd be willing to edit that.
But the numbers don't matter, right?
Number five.
A pharaoh during Joseph's time.
Yeah, for a pagan prince, he's actually not stupid.
He listens.
He's very rational.
He's smart in putting Joseph where he is. I mean, it wasn't his fault that Israel became slaves.
No.
He literally saved the children of Israel from starving.
Right.
And that was a blessing. So.
Well, and look at it. Because he did that, everybody in his kingdom basically became a serf and owed him 20%.
Yeah.
I mean, God blessed him in that way.
Right. And to this day, we walk like an Egyptian sometimes. Another. We had to have another Bengals. Was that a Bengals song?
I think that was Bengals, yeah.
Wait.
I'm going to Google it.
Because we had Manic Monday. I don't know. I'm getting my girl bands confused.
Yeah, that's the Bengals.
Number four.
Solomon.
Yeah. Vicar, do you know his other name?
I don't remember it off the top of my head. Oh, it's Jedediah.
Yeah, what does it mean?
Give me one moment.
Peter, cut this part out.
I can tell you exactly what it means. Darn, every other Wikipedia page will tell you exactly what it means at the time you need to know what to tell you. Further Googling is needed.
Be Peter, don't cut this part out. It's kind of funny.
Beloved of the
yes,
Lord.
Yes, it means beloved of Yahweh. Yes.
So if you're looking for good boy names, Jedediah is a great one. Solomon is also a good one.
Right. Solomon King was a great offensive lineman.
I'm sure he was. Solomon Kane was a great Puritan who fought evil in weird fiction in the 1920s and 30s.
Yeah, so he built a temple, was known for his wisdom, obviously. He asked God for wisdom. And obviously we had the whole woman thing.
Yeah, that happened.
Right.
You can't just say the whole woman thing.
I think yes, everybody knows what we're talking about.
Well, if they don't know,
they can read about it in 1 Kings.
Number three,
David. Right?
Yeah.
Now, do you think he should be higher?
I don't know. He's got that whole woman thing.
Well, you got him there.
Yeah.
You know, it's nice that David... It's nice to list David high because David is like so many people. I mean, he's very emotional. You can see that in the Psalms that he writes. You can see that in the things that have been recorded and that he struggled and he strove. I mean, things didn't come easy. He was falsely persecuted by Saul. And then he was only king of Judah for like 10 years. And there was a civil war between Judah and the 10 tribes of the northern kingdom who followed Ish-bosheth and that sort of thing. You know, for all of his faults, you know, David is a pious and godly man who desires the forgiveness of sins. He prepared for the building of the temple. And even though he was a good king and a good man in many ways, he was a pretty bad dad.
Right. Here's the thing about that too. Like if anybody had an inspired writer recount the truth of our lives, like who of us would come out smelling like a rose, right? I mean, if it's going to be honest with us, that's the one thing about the Bible, which is amazing compared to other writings that you see, where they're all epic glorifications of this person never did anything wrong, and he was always a hero. When we read the Bible, even the greatest of the kings, you know, had messy lives. It's because it's really happened.
Right. Yeah, that God works in spite of your sinfulness, and that can be a great comfort to us.
I will say, though, David is a particularly bad father.
Yeah. Yeah.
And unfortunately, it's not for the reason that most people think. It's not because he was neglectful. It's because he was too indulgent.
Right.
He should have punished Amnon for raping Tamar. He should have. Had he done that, Absalom would have not had a cause to rebel against him. And then Adonijah tries to take the throne from Solomon, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because David didn't make a decision. He was far too indulgent. And I mean, that's the kind of age we live in, right?
Right.
Where we are too indulgent. And we're too indulgent with ourselves. We're too indulgent with our children. And this is not good for them.
Another example of that is Eli.
Yeah, exactly. Eli's another one, right? I don't think David is as bad as Eli, but they're both pretty bad because, like, you know, how your kids turn out isn't all up to you, because look at Samuel. Samuel had bad kids.
Mm-hmm.
But God doesn't condemn him for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But David is particularly lenient with his children. And this then causes bad things in his family.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think there's a lesson to be learned there for us, right?
Yeah, it's because he was a king, he also had another vocation that as a father.
Yeah, and that maybe we should, I don't know, be, even though it's hard, you know, we should actually be more disciplined with our families, right?
Mm-hmm.
That being stricter is a good thing because, you know, all these things were written for our learning, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
All right, do you know what number two is?
I thought that was number two.
That was number three. I have a king here that there isn't anything bad written about him.
Well, Josiah should have been number two, but I'll allow
it. Okay.
Number two.
Melchizedek.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I don't know if that counts.
Okay.
Well, that's a count? King. So.
Well, the king of righteousness, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, so who was he?
He's just
Well, his reign has no beginning, nor does it have an end. So I can't really give you dates on that. But
okay. Now, why is the author of the Hebrews saying that?
Because he is a type of the Christ who is to come.
Okay. So if his reign has no beginning and no end, because it's not mentioned in Holy Writ, okay, must have happened like somebody that lives hundreds of years, right? So who do you, Vicar, think that it is?
Well, Jesus, of course.
Well, Melchizedek is a picture of Jesus.
So
but,
it could have been like Noah?
Oh, well, I think, I'm trying to remember, Luther takes it to be Shem.
Because Shem actually outlives Abraham.
Yes.
Right. So Luther takes it to be Shem, you know, one of the patriarchs. Mm-hmm. Perhaps Eber, because Abraham is named as a Hebrew, one mm-hmm. who is descended from Eber would be another one, right? Mm-hmm. What is this king? He is both king and priest. He rules over Salem,
mm-hmm.
where
which
we burn
later
witches.
Becomes Jerusalem.
Yep. You know, peace. That's why we burn witches there. This is why Walpurgis Nacht is the best. So I'm all about burning witches.
All right, that brings us to number one.
And number one.
See, without mentioning it, so when did this king reign? Vicar?
Well, I assume number one is Jesus.
That's right.
Well, from the beginning of the world, right? So.
Yeah. Well, Berg probably would want me to have Josiah switch places with him, but I'm not keeping him there.
Well, and I think that's the interesting thing about Jesus' reign is it is from before the creation of the world, but it's also every time somebody comes to faith because he becomes my Lord. Every time there is a baptism, this is where they own the rule of Christ. In some of our hymns, we talk about that, owning his rule, right?
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, how does he become my Lord? Well, when the Holy Spirit applies these things and his gracious and humble reign to me in that he becomes my lord. And I think that's awesome, you know?
And as I'm thinking about, this might be kind of the direction I wind up going with my sermon as I'm playing this out in my head, you know, of from the Lord's Prayer. Because sometimes a good place to start is, well, what do we learn from the catechism and some of these things? And thy kingdom come certainly can play a thought. What do we pray when we pray that? How does the kingdom come? Who is the king?
Mm-hmm.
So,
who is the king? Of what nature is his kingdom, and that the whole world follows after it. Because I love taking the Pharisees' words and making them right to their eternal shame.
Yeah. They you know, what I think about it is sometimes when I think of the Pharisees, how many of them died thinking to themselves, I nailed this. you know, these 10 commandments I kept, you know?
Yeah.
We you know.
How many Pharisees, how many... How many Americans?
Right.
Yeah. Kind of a narrator, they didn't.
Yeah, from like, what is that? Arrested Development, right?
Yeah.
Kind of they have this nice big speech, and it's like, that never happened. So, yeah, I mean.
So, listeners, if you have any you would like to add to this list, Vicar, where can they get a hold of us?
They can email us at feedback@clericalerrors.org.
Dorg. Okay.
Sorry, I said it a little quick. .org. They can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/clericalerrors. And they can find us on X.
X me, bro.
At clericalerrors P.
P for podcast, bro. By the way, there is news about this podcast.
Oh,
there's another platform you can listen to the show. Peter, would you like to tell them?
Yeah, so Google is phasing out the Google Podcast app at the end of the month here. So we are, to make sure that y'all can keep listening, YouTube has allowed me to upload all of the past episodes and continuing episodes on YouTube. So if you want to listen on YouTube, you can now. It's youtube.com/@clericalerrorspodcast.
But the other podcast apps will still be working, right?
Yeah.
So
just the Google one is going away, and if you switch to YouTube Music, it wouldn't have let you do it. So
right.
But just most to make people, sure everybody can keep listening.
Because most people listen, I think, are on Apple Podcasts.
So I think that's, yeah.
Well, this will be great for my parents, because they used to mention, oh, we watched your podcast, because they would listen on their TV.
Now they can really watch.
Yeah. Or their TV or their computer.
To be clear, we're not doing video.
No.
We're just uploading the audio as a YouTube video. So yeah, if that is easier for you, you can go to our YouTube channel at Clerical Errors Podcast.
All right. How are we doing on
Woo-hoo!
Time?
Woohoo! Yeah!
We are at 101... 103 on the recording. So we could go another 5 minutes.
So, Vicar, what do you want to talk about?
If you got something.
All right.
I want to do, can we do a couple, we have just the perfect amount of time to do some Pope tweets.
Okay.
Well, no, we're not doing Pope
okay.
tweets.
Okay. Whoa.
You just got vetoed.
All right.
So I just learned a new slang word.
Okay.
Oh,
this is dangerous.
Okay, so I was looking at a meme today posted by the Revidissimus David Ramirez out of Wisconsin, and he said, Dune 2 Longhoused. So I was like, I don't know what that means. I know that longhouses are pretty cool. Like, you can drink mead in them. That's the setting for Beowulf killing Grendel.
You're talking about Cyrus
again?
That's a
cool thing, right?
Are you talking about Cyrus again?
I wish. So, the longhouse is a slang expression and a metaphorical concept popularized among the far right and the alt-right, used to refer to a matriarchal society that is distinguished by suppressing nonconformity to established rules by canceling individuals, avoidance of direct conflict, and valuing safety, including emotional safety over privacy and individualism, among other things. The expression has been used similarly to living in the pod and is used to describe the societal order that the far right strives to alter or exit. Starting in 2023, the phrase saw spread on iFunny, X, and 4chan, appearing in various memes.
I love that iFunny is first on that list.
You could tell they did yes. the research.
So when he says that Dune 2 Longhouse, what does that mean? Place this in context.
Okay, so I watched the Dune 2 movie. There were some good things about it that were faithful to the book, but there were other concepts that were suppressed because you really can't... The book is always going to be better because you can do more. So there are a lot of storyline plots that just have to get left out because otherwise it wouldn't make for a coherent story. It's kind of like Chekhov's gun. Have you ever heard of that?
Nope.
So, whoa.
Really?
Whoa. Really?
Vicar, what's Chekhov's gun?
I've heard the phrase, but I don't think I'm familiar enough with it.
That's crazy.
I'll pull up.
See, Peter knows what I'm talking about.
I don't remember what it specifically it relates to, but the idea is that they wouldn't, in a story, they wouldn't talk about the character having a gun if he wasn't going to use it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So basically, if a gun shows up in the first scene or the first act, it's going to be shot in the second act.
Right. Okay.
Okay. And that's the way you have to do movies and TV shows and that sort of thing, right? Unless you're going to do I think TV shows now are a better medium for telling longer and more complex stories because you can do so much more with the arcs.
Right.
Then, you know, so, but anyway, regardless, Dune 2 really brought out the character of Chani as sort of a feminist, liberal. She actually calls the people in the South who unthinkingly follow Paul Muad'Dib. She calls them fundamentalists, and because they actually believe their prophecies about the Lizan al-Ghaib, which is the voice from the outer world, the Kwisatz Haderach, their messiah. And so there's a lot of interesting things there. It's very interesting because I listened to a paper by the same individual, you know, Pastor Ramirez, who talked about the Great Awakening. And he actually has argued that we've already had like a religious earthquake or upheaval in the United States. Only the religion is not Christianity as it has been in the past, but it's actually been sort of this woke ideology, which is a religion. And the vanguard of that is actually college-aged women, which, surprise, surprise, Zatanna, who is, or Zayana, whatever her name is.
Zendaya?
Who plays, something like that. I don't know. You can look it up. Like, she was on Disney or something at one point. Yeah. So, Zayana or something.
I think it's Vicar, what does that name mean? Like,
means one who likes attention.
So, I mean, she fits this category actually very, very well, right? This liberal 20-something woman who fights against the power and is going to be her own strong, independent woman. And so they end up actually changing the chronology of the book where she and Paul are married. They actually have a son who dies in battle, and she sticks with him. She actually, at the end of the movie, leaves because she's a strong, independent woman who doesn't agree with what he's doing, which is very interesting, the sort of notion of equality among the Fremen who don't care about the individual. Groups who need to survive don't care about the individual. They actually subsume the individual for the tribe, and that's what Frank Herbert's Dune novel is all about. It's about sacrificing the individual for the tribe, which is why the strongest lead. It is actually the greatest sort of meritocracy, which means that it is fundamentally unequal because people are not the same.
Maybe so, we need to do a full The Book Was Better segment on this one, huh?
Probably, yes.
Okay. Do you want me to read the book or watch the movie?
You won't get through either.
You won't. I find it incredibly interesting, but I understand that most of our audience probably won't.
To get you an example, right? I watched the first movie and didn't like it, because it was so long and it felt like nothing happened. Now, for a book reader, I'm sure it was like pretty decent because there was a lot of stuff that you needed to get the context of, and the book readers wanted to see this and this and how the technology works and whatever else, all the different worlds. I just wanted to see what the plot was actually doing, and instead I got more world than I got plot. The second movie, you got about the same, except it was for the Fremen kind of world, basically. And there just wasn't, it felt like to me, a lot of actual plot going on.
So going back to the point, so I can put this all together in my mind. So when you say that Dune 2 Longhoused, it means that the character...
You are supposed to empathize with Chani, who is a liberal woman who is opposing the now bad guy, which is her former lover, Paul Muad'Dib Atreides, who has now become the emperor.
Okay.
Oh, and, wow. Is that how you saw it? That you're supposed to empathize with her?
Yes. I think that was their intent. I think it fails miserably.
Yeah, I don't think it came across that way.
Oh.
So I think that's what they intended to do.
Okay.
And yet, because... you're supposed to look at Paul as a demagogue who manipulates the fundamentalists to follow him, and then he is going to release a jihad upon the galaxy and kill billions of people.
All right, well, Bulligan, I think you have your homework. Try and watch the movies.
All right.
I don't know if the Dune 2 is in theaters right now, I think, still.
All right, I'm on this.
Obviously, I don't buy into Frank Herbert, because Frank Herbert actually wrote Dune as the anti-Carlyle line, because Thomas Carlyle, he was a Victorian Englishman who actually wrote about the great men theory, that it's great men who move history. And Frank Herbert actually wrote Dune against that heroes are actually the problem. And so his whole goal was to make Paul the bad guy. Now, instead of doing that the way that they should have done it, in that, you know, which hopefully they'll end up making Dune Messiah, what they do is, you know, they make an individual woman the one who has the problems.
And that's why The Incredibles is better than Dune.
Amen.
All right. We're longhousing the world as we speak.
Wait a minute. No,
did
we're
I get
not.
That wrong?
No,
okay.
No. That's making matriarchy. Like women ruling over men.
Okay. So like Barbie
who
also
can cancel them.
The movie.
Well, maybe. I don't even know if I'd say Barbie was longhousing.
I haven't actually seen the movie, so.
Yeah, I haven't either, so I might watch it and
all right.
Rage about that at some
if
point.
If the listener wants us to do a live watching of Barbie. They can email us. All right, we should end this. Peter's getting tired. All right. Thank you for listening. I'm Bullhagen.
I'm Berg.
And I'm Vicar.
May your king be Bernard King.
Thank you for joining us. This podcast is available on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts. Questions, thoughts, concerns? You can contact us on Facebook at facebook.com/clericalheirspodcast. On Twitter @clericalheirsp for podcast, or email us at feedback@clericalheirs.org. Thanks for listening to Clerical Heirs. See you next time.